Tonight we're going to move on to lesson three, and the title for my lesson tonight is Rites of Passage. Now remember that we are here for a couple of three things every Wednesday night: worship, good worship, good fellowship, and a look into the Word. Those are the three things that we look for on Sunday night, and I trust you will invite others to come and join us. I wish we had twice this many in chapel on Wednesday night. I know there are folks that need to be here. And so why don't you just talk to your friends and others about coming for the Word, for worship, and for great fellowship, and every once in a while a little bit of food thrown in on top of all of that. Let's take a moment to revisit some definitions very quickly. Our topic that we're looking at right now is called Passages, Facing the Challenging Transitions of Life. A passage is the act or process of moving through, under, over, or past something on the way from one place to another. A transition is a passage from one form or one state or one style or one place to another. Now, in order to keep our minds semi-straight here as to what we're looking at, we need to distinguish between two terms that get confused very, very frequently, and that's the term change and the term transition. Change is about what has happened to us. Something has occurred. Something has ended, something has gone away, something has transformed itself, something is no more. Around us, something has happened to us. That's change. Transition is how we adjust to that change, or how we adjust to what has happened to us. Now, I'm not going to go back over everything that we've been saying about change, but let me just say this, that our lives are absolutely constantly full of significant changes. Some of them are good and very positive in our lives. Some of them are not so good and somewhat negative in our lives. Some of them are absolutely tragic at times. Some transitions are temporary, while others actually are permanent, and they come into our lives and they introduce for us lifelong change. Then there are transitions that are very common for all of us. If we live long enough, practically all of us will go through certain transitions. I had the joy of discovering not too many years ago that at a certain age in life, I had to transition from bifocals to trifocals. I hated them the day I got them, and I hate them today as well. So some transitions are not easy. Some of them are not life-threatening, but they are transitions just the same, and some of them are common among all or most people. In other words, everybody tends to experience them. Transitions can be anticipated. They can even find us ready for them. We can be ready for transitions. We can look forward to transitions. We can even prepare for certain transitions in our life. But the other side of that coin is sometimes they cannot be prepared for. They cannot be anticipated. And at the same time, they really cannot be avoided. Other transitions come suddenly, sometimes brutally, and seem to be unique either in your life or in the life of your family or in your setting. We tend more often than not to think that our problem is change. We don't like change. We resist change. We see change as being forced upon us. And so naturally, we come to think that our problem is change. And if we could just change things to the point that there is no change, if that makes any sense, life would be a lot better. But reality is, for me to tell you tonight, that transition is a lot harder than change. Transition takes longer. Transition will cost you more in your own personal investment. It will cost you more in having to be honest with yourself and evaluating where you are and what's going on. It will cost you more in adjustment in your life. Take, for example, somebody who concludes that no one is friendly in this town, or no one is friendly in this church, or my boss doesn't like me, so we up and we move to another town, or we move to another church, or we move to another job, and yet in making that change, we take the same old me along with us, and we find in our new town that they're not friendly either. And in our new church, they're not friendly either. In our new boss, he doesn't appreciate us any more than the last boss did. What's the problem there? The problem is we have faced a change, or we have made a change, but we've not taken the effort or the investment to go through the transition of those things which are within us that might be provoking the difficulties that we see so easy. It isn't the changes around us. It is how we handle them, how we respond to them, or just how we manage them as they inevitably come into our lives. Now, let's talk a little bit tonight about some categories of transitions. I think this might help us. You heard me mention, in fact, in the first slide tonight on our PowerPoint, there was a quotation from a man by the name of William Bridges. He is a secular writer who writes prolifically on the topic of transitions. I read this week a testimony of his own epic transition when he lost his wife to cancer, and read in minute detail how this couple went through that process together. And I have a great deal of respect for him and how he came to his views on this issue of transition. And then there is another lady. Her name is Teresa Froelich. And I met her under the title of a transition coach. And the more I read about Teresa Froelich, the more I discovered how prolifically capable she is to treat this topic. And then right down there in the bottom of her biography, I discovered that she actually is an Assemblies of God pastor. She is an Oriental lady who really gives herself to a ministry of leading people into a better understanding of the transitions that they go through. And both of these writers and educators in this area, they give a breakdown of various kinds of transitions, which I think are helpful. First of all, Bridges sets forward two categories of transitions. He talks, first of all, about what he calls reactive transitions. And a reactive transition is triggered by some type of a specific change. A change that may be dramatic, it may be abrupt, it may be disruptive, it might be pleasant, but it is something that very specifically occurs, and then as a result of that, a transition ensues or follows almost out of necessity. An injurious auto accident can leave somebody in a state of reactive transition. If you know our dear brother Mel Kranz, who went through a very difficult automobile accident, is still in the transition process of learning how to deal with the physical damage and the healing process that went through. His transition is a reactive one to that crisis that was thrust into his life. It can indeed be a death in the family, an unexpected death in the family that suddenly thrusts us into a posture of crisis that is a reactive crisis. It can be the loss of a job. We didn't anticipate it. We didn't see it coming, and there it is, and all of a sudden we are in a state of reactive transition. It can be, God forbid, a fatal diagnosis. We go into a doctor's office for checkups or whatever, and suddenly we're walking out with far more than we thought we would ever walk out with, and we find ourselves inundated and sunk, actually, in the process of what Bridges would refer to as a reactive transition. Then secondly, he talks also about developmental transitions. These are transitions. They are not triggered by specific changes. I like the wording that he uses to define this, but then it does need some unpacking. He says a developmental transition is one produced by a natural inner unfolding of those aspects of ourselves that are built right into who we are and how we are made. In other words, they are part of our created being. They are part of our natural man. Adolescence would be one of those developmental transitions when we move suddenly from being a boy to being an adolescent. And then young men full of vigor giving birth to their sons and daughters, or young women taking care of their children and building a family, suddenly find that they've transitioned beyond that to something that is called a midlife crisis. And a midlife crisis, which most people experience in one form or another, is a developmental transition. You know, you can also have a developmental transition that starts in your mind. We suddenly become dissatisfied. We're dissatisfied with who we are. We're dissatisfied with our job. We're dissatisfied with our spiritual walk. And so we begin to seek something different. We realize that what was there was inadequate. We have to let go of it. We have to change and move on. That too can be called a developmental transition. And then, of course, one which everybody in this church will ultimately fall prey to, and that is that developmental process called aging. I just enjoy going across the hall to the multipurpose hall and finding Pastor Mike and the young adults in there, and one of them is holding a little 3-year-old boy, and I love to just wiggle my little finger in that little boy's face and say, "Sweetheart, just hang in there, because you're headed towards senior adult ministries, and I want you to stay true, and I want you to stay faithful, because you're going to be mine one of these days." Well, it's a joke, but it is reality. Aging is one of those developmental transitions that hits all of us, and sometimes it hits us very hard. Pastor Teresa Froelich, she breaks these categories down a bit differently, and she writes about, number one, unexpected and involuntary transitions. Transitions which are not foreseen, they are not chosen, they are not planned, they are just thrust upon us. Then she says, secondly, there is unexpected but voluntary transitions. For example, a job loss leading to a decision to relocate. The decision to relocate is your decision. It's not required. The people that you worked for, they're not running you out of town, and there are other jobs in place, but you voluntarily make the decision to transition to a new geographical location. She would call this unexpected, involuntary transition. Thirdly, she talks about expected and voluntary transitions. These are transitions that are expected in the normal course of life. A career change, after giving it a long-term consideration, would be an expected and yet a voluntary transition. Sometimes the effects of aging, we know it's coming, we feel it's coming, our bones tell us that it's coming, our memories tell us that it's coming, our teeth tell us that it's coming, our joints tell us that it's coming, and so one day we wake up and we decide, you know, I don't need to be driving that car anymore. Oh, sorry. But you know, that would be one of those expected. We know it's going to happen one day, and yet we voluntarily move into that. And then there is, fourthly, the expected and the involuntary transitions. We know the transitions are coming, especially does this refer to the aging process, but sometimes they're not a matter of choice. Our kids normally make the decision to move out. We don't normally kick them out on the streets, with rare exceptions. Normally, we don't do that. Our kids normally make the decision to move out, and sooner or later, the last one is going to move away. And we suddenly find ourselves in an expected but an involuntary transition called the empty nest syndrome. All of a sudden, we're there. Peggy, I heard you groan. Sometimes it's that process of aging again that's not totally normal. Illness has happened, and it seems to be speeded up, or it seems to be more complex than it used to be. So there are all kinds of categories of transitions that we need to look at and at least be aware of to enable us to begin to understand better what's going on in our lives and what's going on in those that are dear to us and what may be going on in the lives of people that we are striving to minister to as well. Now let's talk about some facts of transition. We've already been talking about this last week in our lesson on endings. In every transition, something has ended. Something has been lost, or something has changed. We're at a place of having to let go to release something or someone and make a replacement with something that we'll call a new normal. Now, it doesn't have to be as serious or as dire as losing your left leg. It can be something that's far, it may be eyesight is being lost and you have always been an avid reader. There is a dear lady in my Sunday school class that now has macular degeneration so badly that she can see hardly anything, and she has a wall-sized television that she has to sit just like this in front of in order to see anything. It's sad to see that transition in her life. Fortunately, it's evident that she is handling it well and she is moving through it well, but she has had to let go of a joy of reading, and she has had to let go of the pleasure of lying on the couch to watch television. She has to stand right up against it to be able to make out the faces that she wants to see. Remember last week, and I will say it 1,000 times over, every transition does indeed begin with an ending. Every transition begins with an ending. I need to make sure that you keep in mind that the range of transitions in our life is very broad, from critical to less critical. They're almost everyday occurrences. Some of them are so small as to not be too noticed. Then there comes that one that is life-changing. Not all endings, hear me well, not all endings leading to transitions involve death. That's not what I'm teaching during these lessons, is how to handle the death of a loved one. If that is where you are and that's what you need, I hope this will apply to your life in this moment. But that's really not the scope of what we're talking about here, because transitions are far broader than that, and mourning is for far more than just a loss of life. You can mourn the loss of a friendship. You can mourn the loss of a job. You can mourn a lot of different things. And so I want to make sure that you understand that not all endings involve death. To the contrary, endings often involve recalculated living. It's just an issue of recalculating our life and preparing ourselves for a new beginning and a new problem, a new day, a new normal. The problem for us many times is working through the process. And that process is moving from the initial experience of loss and letting go and moving into the neutral zone of making the adjustment, and ultimately on into the zone of a new beginning. Here it is again visually in the little graphic that I shared with you last week that you can look at as we talk. The progression through these essential steps of passage in the transitions of life is especially challenging, however, when it does indeed involve the loss or letting go of someone, a person, a spouse, a child even, a loved one, or a friend. It could be the loss of a pastor who for some reason or another will no longer be your pastor. It could be that type of a loss of someone. It can be through a death, through divorce, through alienation, through lost friendship, through lost romance, through betrayal, through separation. We deal with this type of loss with incredible difficulty and prolonged pain because we carry guilt over this very thought of moving from one of those steps to another. The idea of letting go sounds like, in our minds, it sounds a lot like forgetting about, or counting as no longer important, or filing it away. And those things don't feel right when a living person that you have known so long is the focus. A lost spouse, a lost child, a lost friend. Those things don't feel right. It feels more like when we talk about letting go that we want to forget about that person and just move on, and they're no longer important, and it just doesn't feel right. It can even feel to us like we are dishonoring that person that we may have lost. That's not what transitioning is all about. It's not about relegating a lost person or a loss of any type to the distant corners of our mind. It's not sending them to the kingdom of forgetfulness and disinterest. It's not about dropping a relationship that has endured for years, dropping a person who has helped define us, or something which has been meaningful or even precious to us and is now no more. It's not transition. It's not just forget it and buck up and move on. That is not the sense of working through a transition. The very existence of that second step in our diagram, that neutral zone, it's there to help us regain enough perspective to rethink and recalculate and recalibrate and get ready to go forward appropriately. The problem is, how do we get beyond the edge of that harsh ending? How do we get from that ending that we talked about last week to the neutral zone so we can sort things out and experience a new beginning with God's help? Everyone in this room, we know, theoretically, one of the incredible promises of God that's found in Jeremiah 29:11. We all know this promise, theoretically. I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans for your good and your welfare, and not for evil. Plans to give you a future and a hope. We know that promise theoretically. But you know, there is something about those terrible endings in our lives that just knocks the floor out from and under us, and we just can't grasp or deal with a promise like that. Anxiety overwhelms us. Sadness or sorrow overwhelms us. Fear overwhelms us. We are so overwhelmed, we're not ready for anybody to start throwing promises at us just yet. I'm just trying to be real here for us, folks. That may not sound very spiritual, but you know, sometimes those dark days are not real spiritual days for us until somebody around us helps us to lift ourselves high enough so that we can begin to see the light of day for ourselves. Loss and endings so consume us that we need to move from that imminent confrontation with loss, what we call the ending stage. We need to move from that point to the neutral stage and begin to deal with the issue of closure and recalibration, to a point that we not only know Jeremiah 29:11 theoretically, but we have regained our footing enough to reach out and believe it and acquire that promise for ourselves. You follow me on that?
Sure.
Have you ever been there?
Yes.
I had meningitis one time, very severe, back in 1991, and I can recall distinctly lying in my hospital bed at Mercy and having my Bible in bed with me. And I would say to myself, you know, this is serious enough that I ought to be doing one of two things. I ought to be praying, or I ought to grab that book and read and grasp for promises. And I never did either one. I didn't have the capacity in that moment to reach out and do either one. Thank God the day came when that returned to me and I found God's word and the power of prayer so very, very real. We have to move from that abrupt, all-consuming, imminent confrontation with that loss which is killing us and destroying us. We have to move beyond that and begin to move into that neutral zone one way or the other. The huge dilemma is how do we navigate the torrent of emotion and disruption and disorientation and manage to take those steps into that second step, that second zone? I'd like to pose an observation about what I call rites of passage in the next few minutes only. I want us to unpack this for a few minutes and see if it resonates with you at all. The idea of rites of passage. First, in the world that you and I live in today, the term rites of passage has only been in use in the Western nations since the early 1900s. It was a Dutch anthropologist who started using the term rites of passage as a title for some observations that he had observed in other cultures, which he had seen for much, much longer, and which were even being practiced in Western culture, just not fully correlated as being universal among all cultures. Let me give you some examples of rites of passage. And by the way, that term on the screen is spelled rites, R-I-T-E-S, not R-I-G-H-T-S. It doesn't mean we have rites now because we're teenagers. It means that there should be some type of ceremony, some type of ritual, some type of signal that represents that transitional moment from this stage to the next stage. Rites of passage. Oh, the one most profound to me is the one I saw in West Africa on so many occasions that happens in the life of boys around the age of 13, and it's just commonly referred to as a circumcision ceremony. This is the age of life. It's the coming out time for African boys in many nations in West Africa, and they will be herded away from the culture that they know. They will be herded away from everything familiar to them, taken from their mothers, taken from their families, literally herded into the deep forest. And there they'll spend several days with the elders who will inculcate in them, you are now prepared to receive history and oral tradition of our tribe. And they will share things with those boys that are never shared with men under the age of 13 years of age. They do go through the circumcision ceremony, and when they emerge from those several days as a group of boys going through this rite of passage all together, they come out as cocky young men. Believe me, I've seen them and been around them. It's not dissimilar to the Jewish bar mitzvah ceremony that is the very same thing around the age of 13. It's a coming of age ceremony. It's not the first rite of passage. The really first rite of passage for a Jewish boy would be the Brit Milah, or his circumcision at 8 days of age. That really is a rite of passage for that a little boy having just been born. Do you remember the old debutante balls of the old classic South? Debutante ball was nothing more than a coming out ceremony for young ladies. It was time for the aristocratic young ladies to meet the public and to be seen in public, and we called it a debutante ball. It was really a coming out, a rite of passage. You know, in a certain sense, high school graduation is a rite of passage. A young man or young woman is leaving an order and a structure that they have been in for 12 years. They will never get back into that same pattern again because college will prove to be very different. And we put them through a rite of passage ceremony that we call college, the high school graduation. What happens when a young man or a young woman get married? What are the rites of passage that we involve in there? Well, the one for the guy is very easy. We don't do it so much in Christian circles, but it's called the bachelor party. It's a rite of passage, moving that guy from the liberty and freedom of being an independent, single young man to being a beleaguered, belabored, enslaved, married man. It's a rite of passage ceremony, and somewhat similar to that is the wedding shower. Now, we may think that that's just to gift the new family, but in reality, it is a rite of passage for that lady among all of her friends to mark the fact that she is moving from being a single lady to being a married lady. Deborah and I had so much fun last night just walking through the house, and we would each one think of rites of passage and throw them at each other. One I think she came up with was the presidential inauguration. Sure is. It's a rite of passage in our culture, especially when it's from one party to another. In a certain sense, New Year's Eve is a rite of passage. We drop this crazy-looking contraption in New York that means absolutely nothing, but it's come a traditional rite of passage between the old and the new. Retirement. I'm getting ready for that. I've got an app on my iPhone here that some of you know all about. And all I've got to do is turn it on, and it tells me that I have 96 days, 20 hours, and 39 minutes until I retire. That's my rite of passage. I do that because it's just how I'm marking the fact that I'm going to be making a transition in my life. Now, we can define transitions, or we can define these rites of passage, rather, as public signals that transition has or is occurring. A formal definition of it would be that a rite of passage is a ritual or ceremonial event signifying a transitional moment in one's life, such as moving from adolescence into adulthood. That would be one. Singleness into marriage, changing from youth to middle age. Well, all of those are, if you will remember, those are developmental transitions, not reactive ones. But I believe they apply to many reactive transitions as well, and that's what I want us to explore real briefly. Genesis chapter 37, 34 and 35. Listen to it again. Jacob has received word and visible evidence of what has transpired to Joseph. Then Jacob tore his garments and put sackcloth on his loins and mourned for his son many days. All his sons and all his daughters rose up to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted and said, "No, I shall go down to Sheol to my son mourning." Thus his father wept for him. Hear me. Father Jacob responded to the agony of imminent grief, believing that his son Joseph was dead. The record of how Jacob responded to this horrible news is one wherein Jacob performs almost all of the rites of passage which move someone from imminent grief to managed grief, which would have been common in his own culture. Societies worldwide have rites involved with the transition involved in human loss or death. And Jacob is seen here by written record acting out the rites of passage involved in the loss of a loved one within his house, the house of Israel. What did he do? He tore his garments. He put sackcloth on his loins. He mourned. He wept. And then the whole clan, men and women, came to bring him comfort and consolation. And Jacob was so brokenhearted, he refused their efforts to comfort him. Please note something very important here. Yes, Jacob is weeping and mourning and wailing and dressing in sackcloth and ripping his clothes out of the agony of a father's broken heart. Just a note here, using Teresa Froelich's breakdown, we would call Jacob's response to the loss and the presumed death of Joseph an unexpected, involuntary transition. Neither Jacob nor Joseph had a say with what was going on in their lives. Maybe Jacob went through a season of remembering. Maybe he remembered that day when this little boy was 8 years old and he went through his Brit Milah. Or maybe he remembered Joseph at 13 years of age, currently the bar mitzvah age in Jewish life. Not so clear back then. Perhaps now, as a brokenhearted father, he quickly ran down the list of rites of passage in Joseph's life, which he would never realize. He would never see Joseph married. He would never see Joseph have his first child. He would never feel the pride of military accomplishment. He would never see Joseph make his religious steps through the Jewish faith. All of those had been gone. Many times in endings which involve dying, I've heard people say such things as, I'll never see my son play football. I'll never see her in a graduation gown. I'll never attend their wedding. I'll never have a grandchild. These are expressions of loss from the developmental transactions in others or in our own lives. But back to Jacob. Horrible, life-changing, future-altering news is received of a supposed tragedy. Forget for now that it was all false, because he wasn't aware of that. His response was simply the agony of a father's heart, but that's only one side of it. The agony of a father's heart was only part of it. Jacob's actions were part of a cultural process within his culture on how to process and handle loss or endings in life. The actions of the grieving father had two purposes. They were reactive to his sorrow, and they were, in a definite sense, a rite of passage between the horror of unexpected, involuntary transition, that ending we've been talking about, and the beginning, the first steps, moving away from the ending into that neutral, fallow period where we can begin to recover. Let's pull up that graphic again and point out that one of our huge issues is moving ourselves or our loved ones through the process of transition. It's helpful to have rites of passage, public signals, or specific ritual steps on the border of these various steps to help us move forward to the next step in the process, toward recalculation, toward rediscovering that new normal. We need these markers. We need these public signals to move us away from the ending and move us into the neutral zone, which we'll talk about next week. Then we need similar signals or markers so that we ultimately can move out of that neutral zone on into a new reality, a new normal, a new beginning. Let me tell you, we have this very same process in our own culture. What happens in your family when someone passes away? There is a point when we begin to move away from the harsh hardness of that initial sorrow and agony of despair. We commonly refer to it as a memorial service or a funeral. It's where all of our friends gather, all of our family acquaintances gather, honor is given, respect is shown, and some level of closure is experienced in those processes that have been created by our own culture. Other cultures pursue different methods, but every culture has some way of moving individuals from that imminent, harsh grief into a state of beginning to deal with the transition toward a new normal. And whatever transition is, it basically follows this same process, in my opinion. In closing, follow with me the story of Peter. Follow him on our graph as I relate his story. Peter's ending came in the chaos of a dark night and a three-part denial that he did not believe himself possible to pursue. And suddenly, he awakens to the shrill voice of a girl accusing him of being with Jesus, and the process begins and is repeated three times. And suddenly, that step becomes a huge ending for Peter. Taken from the stench of a fisherman's boat and moldy nets, and given the life of a rabbi and teacher, he throws it down the drain through a horrible ending. And the only thing Peter can do is to rush into the night, weeping violently. You will see Peter dealing with that ending. He doesn't totally disappear. His name crops up occasionally. But the next time you really run into Peter, it's a different Peter. He's on the seashore. And I started to call it a come to Jesus meeting, but it really was a Jesus came to Peter meeting. And for each one of those denials, Jesus encountered Peter and gave him an opportunity. Peter, do you love me more than these? We can speculate about the details of that all we want to, but it was a process of moving Peter toward a new beginning. His neutral period was not an easy one, but it was the necessary one between his horrible ending and any semblance of recovery. And it comes during that come to Peter meeting on the shores of the sea. And that's where the genesis of his rites of passage toward a new beginning took place. In the aftermath is the day of Pentecost and Peter's incredible message and his incredible character and his credible career, which shows him leaving behind the horrible, crushing ending and struggling through that neutral time of letting things rearrange in his life and thinking and contemplating and considering and hearing the voice of his Jesus and being restored. You see, restoration, you don't push a button or buy restoration in a ready-to-serve bag. You work through restoration. We'll talk about that next week. And the end for Peter is a new beginning, a ministry he perhaps could never have fathomed that exists to this very day as Peter safely and effectively accomplished the transition that the Lord wants for every one of us. His story reveals a powerful model of a child of God facing the challenging transitions of life and finding, however hopeless he at one time felt and however useless he at one time destined himself to be, joy truly does come in the morning. What an awesome example. But it could never happen without those things we set in place to keep us moving through the process. And so somewhere along the line, we do have to move on, but move on doesn't mean erasing someone's precious name from our memory. Moving on means that person is no longer with us, but their memory will be so real. To this day, multiple years after my mother went to heaven, I still will find myself laying down in bed at night and thinking, without thinking, oh, I haven't called Mom yet. 6 years after she died, because her memory and her person and her influence is so very real in my life. So that's not what transition is all about. There is a process. I pray that the Lord is going to help us work our way through it. Are you receiving anything from any of this that helps you or will help others. Stand with me, if you will. Grab a cup of cider before you go and one more dose of fellowship, and we'll look forward to seeing you Sunday morning.